south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Well, today I'm trying to do this show from Bitcoin Beach in El Salvador. I know it probably sounds a little tinny because when I pulled my remote headphones out of my suitcase, the hoop that goes around your head that connect the two headphones was completely broken, squished in transit. But hey, that's what duct tape is for, right? I mean, this is Latin America. But not to worry. Repair, fix, rinse and repeat, until there's just no place else to put the duct tape and chicken wire. So here we are, smack dab in the middle of my Expat Insider Seminar. What a great group we have, too. I mean, really great. All of them from very different walks of life, most of them smarter than I am. Free thinkers, free spirits, like-minded people you only seem to be able to meet online these days. And still, if you meet them online, they just might be fake. Nobody knows. Even so, this expat seminar group, quite a few of them have told me they keep their mouths shut at work, around their families, and in their neighborhoods. Sometimes, you know, it's frustrating and lonely being the only voice of reason. But man, I'll tell you, with our seminar group here in Central America, the conversations are fast, furious, with a lot of depth, and the laughs. Lots of laughs. Man, they come a mile a minute. Well, we're just having loads of fun. A couple of minibuses and a couple of SUVs just motoring all over the place. So anyway, we've been in and out of El Salvador, in and around the beach where everything is Bitcoin, and in the Guatemalan Altiplano at around 5,000 to 6,000 feet above sea level, a mile up, where it's spring-like weather between 60 and 80 degrees all year round. But while at the beach in the lowlands of El Salvador, man, it's hot. So we're moving around like crazy, drinking from the fire hose and just, well, taking in the sights. Oh, and besides the fact of the temperature difference between the Altiplano and beachfront and lowlands, people always ask me, what's the difference between Guatemala and El Salvador? And I guess it's best to explain it like this. Picture Costa Rica just loaded with gringos, first world prices all the way. Lots of scammers, both gringos and locals. Costa Rica is a place where you are nothing but a dollar sign. I like to tell people to make it simple. Guatemala is like Costa Rica was 30 or 40 years ago. You can walk around all day, even in a busy big city like Guatemala City that's got 3 million people, and not see a single gringo. And really, the only places in all of Guatemala you're going to see a gringo or two or three or 10 when you're walking around are two particular places. In Antigua Guatemala and the lake region called Atitlan. Because those are the two places in the country that are considered on the gringo tourist trail. But that's not quite accurate, because saying that you're on the gringo tourist trail in Guatemala is nowhere like saying you're on the gringo trail in Cancun or Costa Rica. Whereas the entire country of Costa Rica, every last square meter is on the gringo tourist trail. And even though people say Antigua Guatemala and Lake Atitlan region in Guatemala are on the gringo tourist trail, it's a completely different kind of tourist trail. For one thing, the tourists are almost completely into tree-hugger tourism or eco-tourism. You know, hiking, biking, jungle trekking, and pyramid and Mayan city exploring, and of course, volcano climbing. Yep, there are a number of volcanoes down here where you can hike up to the top and peer down into the bubbling lava. Or is it lava? Tomato? Tomato? Anyway. Because Antigua Guatemala is a UNESCO World Heritage Site where they've got over 100 Spanish colonial buildings, churches, cathedrals, etc., built 200, 300, even 400 years ago and still standing. Well, you got to know that brings in a different kind of tourist, a more studious, thoughtful, and educated type. Yep, a lot of archaeology, architecture, geology, and history buffs trek on down to Antigua Guatemala and the lake region. And of course, there's a good measure of backpacker tourists, too, who are coming down for those cheap Spanish lessons and Spanish immersion courses. It's one of the best places in the world to learn your Spanish. Hey, that's why I first came down to Antigua Guatemala, because I could not learn my Spanish in Costa Rica. So anyway, that's what I tell people when they ask me to describe Guatemala and when they ask me to describe El Salvador, when they want to know what's the difference. As for El Salvador, and people down here skip the L, they just say Salvador. I tell them it's like Guatemala was around 20 years ago or so. It's a little bit more rustic, rough around the edges, and the people slightly poorer. But since they made Bitcoin legal tender some months ago, there are big changes happening in that country. In fact, when I was scheduling the seminar, it was almost impossible to get hotel space. They're all booked up for months and months, and the hotel people are just amazed by it because the adjacent countries are having no such luck. Especially since during the COVIDiot phase, many of them closed down and never opened back up again. In fact, with this seminar, for the very first time, I wasn't able to get everyone into the same hotel. This time, we had people staying in two, even three different hotels on the very same night. All close by, but still a bit inconvenient in the logistics sense. That never happened before, and I've had 18 seminars now, and it's all due to, guess what? Making Bitcoin legal tender in El Salvador. It depends who you talk to, but people and certain statistics are showing that they've had an increase in tourism this year over last of 30 to 100%. That's never happened before. And the increase this year over last as far as GDP in El Salvador, 10%. And that's never happened before either in any Latin American country. Do you know what the average GDP year over year growth is in Latin American countries? 1 to 2%. That's why there are all kinds of bureaucrats visiting from adjacent Latin American countries. They want to know if they can get in on some of that action too. In fact, it's been predicted within the year, two more countries are going to come on board making Bitcoin legal tender. Oh, and right in the center of the Bitcoin revolution down here on Bitcoin Beach, our seminar group went into a little place called Hope House. That's H-O-P-E House in a little surfer town called El Zante on the beach, where a young Latino guy named Roman Centeno, he must be around 26 or 27 years old, he gave us a little one-hour presentation and show and tell. He was one of the original handful of three or four guys that got the whole thing started. He told us in English how about a year and a half ago, a gringo surfer guy who'd been coming down for 10 or 15 years, how he'd received an offer of a donation from an anonymous Bitcoin whale. He picked this Mike Peterson guy to get the thing started because he saw how Mike Peterson over the years was helping out some of the poor young kids in the area who had really no hope, whose only ambition, believe it or not, was to somehow get to the United States. Illegally, of course, because they're all dead broke and had no other way, but to try their luck through Mexico and sneak in. In fact, this young Salvadorian guy, Roman, told us that until the Bitcoin revolution came to El Salvador, just a little more than a year ago, there were just a few options for young kids. Stay in the area close to where they were born and remain dirt poor. Or take a chance, go to the big city of San Salvador, about an hour or hour and a half away, and try to get some work or end up in a gang. Or take a bigger chance and take the dangerous journey northward to the United States and join the 2 million Salvadoranos living up there mostly illegally right now. So anyway, this original gringo surfer, do-gooder I told you about, Mike Peterson, somehow was approached by an anonymous Bitcoin millionaire who donated, I believe it was around $500,000 in Bitcoin at the time, with the stipulation they couldn't just convert it to dollars and start spending it and helping people. They had to train the people up on how to use cryptocurrency. So they built Hope House, the place we went, as a training center. It looks like a schoolhouse. And it didn't take long to catch on because you see in this little town of El Zante, almost no one had a legitimate bank account. And all the little businesses and tiendas and tire repair shops worked strictly with cash because they didn't have enough money or credit to get a bank account and thus qualify for a credit or debit card. And of course, it was impossible for the little corner stores and hole-in-the-wall businesses to get a merchant's account at a bank, and you need that to be able to accept credit cards. So before Bitcoin, everyone used cash. And Roman, the young Salvadoreño guy, also said, for the first time in these people's lives, they were able to actually save money in their Bitcoin wallets. Because remember, before, they didn't have bank accounts, so whatever they made, they spent. Plus, and this will blow your mind, those 2 million Salvadoranos living up in the States sending back remises, you know, 50, 100, 200 bucks a month back to their families. It turns out Western Union, MoneyGram, and all those money transferring services take a cut every year of $400 million. So that's $400 million not being sent back home, instead being gouged by middlemen like Western Union. And Bitcoin, or rather, the Lightning Network that runs on top of the Bitcoin network, allows them to send that money for just a few pennies per transaction. Oh, and by the way, when our seminar group was standing out in front of the Hope House building on the street, right across was a tiny little tienda. I mean tiny. Kind of a mini mart. And Roman wanted to prove to us how easy it was to buy something with Bitcoin. Again, using that Lightning Network where fees are less than a penny a transaction. Well, anyway, he walked over there, bought a bottle of water for 50 cents, scanned a big old QR code that was posted on the wall. Suddenly, the name of the little tienda popped up on his cell phone. A little calculator came up. He punched in 50 cents, hit the send button, and made an instant purchase. Now, since El Salvador uses the U.S. dollar and Bitcoin, you could pay with either one. That makes it dead easy for the locals to understand Bitcoin because they see both at the same time on their little smartphones. Yep, they've all got smartphones, even though they're only making maybe $200 to $300 a month. Hey, the smartphone that I've been using for the last couple of years only cost me about $50. I went to a used phone store, got a basic phone with just enough processing power, turned out to be a Galaxy 3. What are they up to now? Galaxy 11? In fact, I can't tell you how many times people have told me, and it's always Latinos or Latinas, Johnny, why don't you get a new phone? You can afford it. You're a gringo. Yep, that's one impression they have about all of us gringos. We're rich. That is, with the possible exception of gringo backpackers, who Latinos and Latinas look upon as tightwad cheap asses, who probably left the mother load at home so as not to have the temptation to spend it while backpacking. In fact, most Latinos still can't figure out why gringos and expats like to backpack. What, with all the money they have, the cars, the houses, the air conditioning, those quick and easy trips to Disney World? Yep, that's right. They think we love Disneyland and Disney World as much as they do. In fact, if you're down here long enough, you'll find, now I'm talking about Latinas now, the ladies. Any Latina who's ever visited the U.S. will make sure that she's got plenty of pictures of her with Mickey Mouse, Minnie, and Goofy. And she'll have them plastered all over her social media profile. Those pictures will be front and center. Oh, and she'll interchange those with pictures of herself romping in the snow, usually building a snowman. Why? Because those two things are on every Latina's bucket list. To go to Disney World or Disneyland and play in the snow. For a Latina to put those on her social media page, man, them's bragging rights. Since only one in maybe 20 Latino families has the money to fly back and forth to the States and visit Disneyland and romp in the snow. But for Latino guys, it's slightly different. Their number one bucket list anti-social media photo has to be standing next to or by a very, very recognizable spot in Nueva York, New York City. Yep, Latin guys get social media bragging points for standing next to one of the usual suspects. You know, Statue of Liberty, Times Square, Staten Island Ferry, Empire State Building, Central Park, they all qualify. And in a pinch, anywhere in Brooklyn. But that's an also-ran. Oh, and one more thing Roman told us that none of us knew. He said the pandemic was very good for Bitcoin adoption in El Salvador. Because during the lockdown up in the States, their families weren't sending back remesas anymore. And the Bitcoin guys at Hope House filled the gap by sending small quantities of Bitcoin every week or two into the crypto wallets of the local people. And after that, it didn't take long for the locals to really warm up their Bitcoin. By the way, I've been hanging around El Salvador for a couple of weeks now, and I haven't seen a single gangbanger. No one with tattoos on their necks. No ass crack pants at all. How you like that? In fact, that was the very first thing I noticed at the El Salvador airport. Nobody had their pants at half-mast. Now, that's not to say I won't spot a couple of said ass-crack-pants retards. You know, lifetime members of the minimum wage club when I go to the big city San Salvador in a couple days. Because, you know, that's where the gangs are concentrated, they say. We shall see. I'll keep you posted. You know, when the subject of crime in El Salvador comes up, you always think of gangs, right? Like MS-13. Well, from what I've been able to gather lately, and I've asked dozens of Salvadoranos, they tell me there are gangs, all right, but they're all pretty much located in the barrios, you know, the crappy areas of San Salvador, the big city. And like any big city anywhere in the world, they've got very nice areas, so-so areas, and crap areas. And the best way to get the lowdown at it is ask your taxi driver, though he probably won't speak English, not in Central America anyway, unless you're in Costa Rica. Anyway, when I'm checking out the safety of any particular area in Latin America or the propensity for crime, I always like to ask the taxi driver. Did I say ax? Well, okay, ax. It also means guitar, you know. Anyway, I like to ask my taxi driver if he's ever been a victim of extortion or does he know anybody who's been extorted. Because, you see, that's the modus operandi of gangs in Latin America. They extort the little businesses in their own particular hood, otherwise known as protection money, a practice they adopted from, who else, the Italian mob. Anyway, what I found out from the taxi drivers in El Salvador is that there's almost no extortion at all outside of the big city of San Salvador. And on the western coast, the Pacific coast of El Salvador, where I'm doing the show right now, in the Bitcoin Beach area and such, El Zante, El Tunco, and a couple of dozen other beach towns, there's practically no extortion going on at all. At least that's what the taxi drivers tell me. In fact, it's quite safe. Oh, and here's another interesting thing about taxi drivers. I've asked a few of them how they get paid. I also ask them if they own their cars, and 99% of them don't. They either work for a company that's got a small fleet of taxis, 5 or 10 of them, or get this, they work for one guy who owns one taxi that he bought with remises from his relatives living up in the States. And I met a few taxi drivers who speak a little bit of English, and they're more than happy to use it on you too. Now, I'm not talking about Latinos who learn their English at school down here in Latin America, because when they learn it that way, they're often hesitant to try it on you. Just like you and I when we take a Spanish, French, or German class in high school, we rarely have the confidence to walk up to, let's say, a German and start babbling away in Deutsch. Just remember, workaday Latinos who come right out and start speaking English with you, they learned it when they were up in the States. Almost all of them learned it by making that long, hard trek to the States via coyote. And once up there, learned a little English until they got caught by the cops or whatever and deported. By the way, the conversation almost always goes something like this. A taxi will pick you up and the driver will start speaking to you in broken English. He'll say something like, I like the United States, especially Virginia, New Hampshire, whatever, followed by, where'd you from? And you'll say something like, oh, you have relatives up there or something? And he'll say, yeah, my Uncle Julio's family, and I live there too. And you'll say, really? For how long? And he'll say, 2, 3, 4 years, whatever. And then he'll go on to tell you all the great things about the United States. They'll just gush about it. And then you might say, well, I will anyway. Well, then why are you down here now? Why aren't you living up there? Now, of course, I know the answer to that question. It's a loaded question. And some, but not all, will fib. They'll say, because grandma's sick or mom's getting old, I gotta take care of Uncle Hector. But the real reason, 9 out of 10 times anyway, is because they got caught and deported. For example, the very last taxi driver I used just yesterday. When I asked him why he wasn't still up there, he looked at me sheepishly and said, well, I found out that in the United States, you need a license to drive. Now, you long-term listeners have heard me say this before, but down here in Latin America, there are lots and lots of drivers without licenses. And with motorcyclists, it's an epidemic. In fact, it's been estimated by certain Latin American governments, as evidenced by this recent study that just came out of Ecuador, which states fully 50% of the motorcyclists there either don't have a license or are driving on one that's expired. By the way, about that taxi driver who admitted to being up in the States, being pulled over without a license and then deported. Well, just the other day, I was at a coffee shop in a strip mall near the airport. I was sitting at an outside table having my $1.50 cafe mocha de java, you know, one that would be $6 or $8 at Starbucks. And the rent-a-cop, who was just standing around with his thumb up his butt, bored as hell, saw that I was a gringo, probably the only gringo he'd seen all day. Got off his chair, walked over to me and said, in broken but decent English, Americano, how you doing? Where you from? I said, Chicago. And he said, oh, my sister lives in Chicago. I like Chicago. I said, you ever been there? He said, no, but my sister's there and she likes it. I said, where'd you learn your English? He said, Virginia. And then he went on about all the glories of living in Virginia. And I said, well, why are you down here then? Already knowing the answer to that question. And he gave pretty much the same answer as the taxi driver. He said, I was driving, I got stopped, I didn't have a license, and they deported me. Deportado. By the way, if you visit Latin America, in fact, if you're anywhere outside the country and you run into another gringo, it doesn't matter if you're on or off the gringo trail, often it's like old home week. Suddenly, you're bosom buddies, even if you've never even stepped foot in the state where the other guy lives. Yep, gringos attract gringos. By the way, do you know the most common questions gringos ask each other when they first meet? Just like that cab driver said to me, where'd you from? Second question, what you down here for? You on vacation or business? Third most common question, what do you do or what do you do for a living? Though that's sometimes the first or second question too. Which is sort of an odd question because when you meet a Latino for the first time, you can talk for a half an hour and he or she will almost never say, what do you do? It's almost always you, the gringo, who ends up asking that question. It seems to be an American thing. In fact, one of my British buddies, he tells me it's kind of rude to ask that question upon first meeting someone up in the UK, which is proof that in some countries we do come off as rude. Most Europeans do think we're kind of crass, you know. And now from the pet peeve department. You know what I absolutely hate? When you go to a restaurant and there's no menu. There's just a QR code. I know that's a symptom of COVIDiot culture. But man, it instantly turns me off. But luckily, if you insist, at least down here in Latin America, the waiter or waitress will go in the back room and produce one for you. And the easy way to do that without arguing is just tell them, you don't have a smartphone. You're a Luddite. Oh, and expat Eddie, who was for many years in the restaurant business, he does the same thing. He asks for a real menu. Though he also tells me if the service isn't so great, on his way out, he'll pull out his cell phone and wave it at the waiter. Oh, and once again, sorry about the bad fidelity with this podcast, but like I said, my high-quality portable headphones and mic got crushed in transit. Oh, and speaking of podcasts in general, one of the guys at the seminar said, Johnny, does anyone at your podcast station tell you what you can and can't say? Do they give you guidelines or try to censor you or do you censor yourself? Well, the answer to that is no, no, and no. But I'll tell you this, in the last 2 or 3 years, with all this BS woke and cancel culture crap, something strange has been happening in the podcast industry. It sort of affects us all, too. You know, every time I'm finished with a podcast, when you're done, just for a minute anyway, you start thinking, did I say anything that could get me canceled? Did I tell a rude story that would hurt sensitive wokesters? Or just tell or reiterate a universal truth that conflicts with the twisted wokester version of the truth they just don't want to hear? You know what? I hope I'm doing that all the time. I've been doing this podcast for 11 or 12 years now, and idiot wokesters have changed things dramatically. So many people are getting canceled these days, it makes you think. So then, do I tend to self-censor? Nah, that's not me, but I try to mind the curse words, because they offend my mom. Though sometimes they do slip through. Sorry about that, Ma. I know 2 Our Fathers and 4 Hail Marys. By the way, speaking of censorship and canceling, what's happening in Canada right now should scare the feces out of you. Can't you see it's a perfect example why governments want a Fed dollar, you know, their own crypto? That means if the sheep and lemmings get unruly like the truck drivers in Canada, they can just pull the plug on your spending ability. They can deem you a terrorist and block your bank account. Though in a way, it's absolute proof that decentralized cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, even some of the shitcoins, can do a nice end run around that system. That's why governments hate Bitcoin and all the decentralized cryptocurrencies, because they can't control them at all. But man, would they love to. And you know, since that Canadian truck stoppage, quite a few people in the media who didn't like cryptocurrency at all before have flipped 180 degrees and are now embracing it. Because they see by example the way the truckers were labeled terrorists and their GoFundMe money was cut off and bank accounts frozen, the only solution to true financial freedom and independence was through Bitcoin and other cryptos. Look, if that Canadian trucker situation doesn't make you want to get out of Dodge in a hurry, then you deserve to go down with the ship. All right, lastly here, we got some bad news coming out of Ecuador. You longtime listeners know I've never quite embraced Ecuador as a Plan B permanent destination. It's usually easy to predict what I like and what I don't like. All you have to do is look at the countries that International Living pushes and the countries they keep touting in every issue. Well, somehow, and I can prove it, they're always way too late to the party. There are no more ground for opportunities in anything that International Living touts. But anyway, here is another reason I don't like Ecuador as a permanent Plan B destination. Though, as always, it's your call. Title of this article, and I'll translate it, comes from one of the biggest Ecuadorian newspapers. It says, Chinese pharmaceutical company to build massive facilities in Ecuador. Chinese pharmaceutical company Sinovac, you've heard that name before, will build a laboratory and production facility in Ecuador. This was announced in a joint statement by Sinovac Company and the Ecuadorian Health Ministry. So it is a sure thing. It'll be a massive plant and so big, it won't even be fully operational till the year 2032. The press release says this new medical facility will put Ecuador at the forefront of medical development in Latin America. Then it says, assuming that the COVID-iot pandemic will be over by 2032, insert laughter here. It says, the project will produce a wide range of medicines, including vaccines for various illnesses. Isn't that nice? Sign me up. Then they repeat this once again. They say, our expectation that the pandemic will be behind us when Sinovac begins operation. Have you had that fax? If so, as they say down here, pobrecito. And finally comes this email from Ronnie. He says, dear Johnny, I know how much you love rap, hip-hop, and reggaeton. But did you ever hear of a branch of rap music called drill rap? That's D-R-I-L-L rap. Well, Ronnie, I never have, but I can't imagine that what you're going to tell me is going to make me happy. Anyway, he says, he says, as usual, it's about life in the streets, the death and the drug dealing side of things. He says the drill music is about the violent side of the ghetto streets. It's aggressive, dark, violent, and about guns, gangs, and shooting. He says it's called drill rap because the term drill in the ghetto means kill or doing a hit or retaliating physically, violently. For example, if someone says, we doing a drill, it means some, insert N-word here, is about to get shot up. Then he says many drill rap songs are written by rappers to diss a particular gang, often written when one gang has a beef against another gang. For example, he says one notable drill rap song was written to diss 10 dead people from a particular gang, and later the rapper himself survived a gunshot wound to the head while standing over the coffin at a dead friend's funeral. So he says you probably don't want your mother, sister, or daughter, or grandma to ever listen to a drill rap song, especially not in the car, because you must be careful with drill rap. If it's blasting out of your car, for example, and you drive through the wrong or even right neighborhood, your car could become your own coffin. Signed, Ronnie. P.S. Thanks for everything you do, Johnny. All right, Ronnie, thanks for making me just a little more sick to my stomach. Nice world we live in, huh? Or I should say, you guys up in the States live in.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.